Hello, everybody. And let me start with this. The best investors don't just pick stocks, they build systems. A very warm welcome to The More You Know. It's the podcast from Stanlib Asset Management where intelligence meets action. My name's Jeremy Maggs. And today I want to decode the architecture of a winning equity strategy, one that's built on data, but is also sharpened by active thinking and designed to endure uncertainty. And there is so much of that around at the moment. My guest is Rademeir Vermaak, who is head of Systematic Solutions. And if I've got this right, his team blends the precision of quantitative models with the insight of human judgment. And the result, as you're going to hear from our conversation, is a smarter and obviously a more resilient portfolio. So my question is, what makes a great systematic strategy tick? And how do you design one in a fast-moving modern world? It's going to be a very interesting conversation. So Rademeir, a very warm welcome. So maybe the most basic of all questions, what exactly is a systematic equity strategy? Tell me what that is.
Hi, Jeremy. Great to be here. So I guess the way to think about systematic investing is that it takes an engineering approach or the engineering mindset and applies it to the problem of equity investing. I think the South African equity investing, the fund management space is very much dominated by accountants. And they have a very specific approach, which is called the discounted cash flow model, where they look at a stock in isolation and they try to value it relative to its future cash flows. What we do is different. We apply the modern tools of data science and the engineering mindset to solving this problem. And perhaps the best analogy I can use of what systematic investing is the following. If you think about the spectrum of active management, where on the one hand, you've got a fund manager that handles his portfolio like a ball of clay, and depending on his insights, emotions, feelings, and talent, he molds that ball of clay into something that is beautiful. That is, I think, what traditional active management is about. On the other end of the spectrum is what we do, where our portfolio is like a Rubik's Cube, where every decision that we take runs on a predefined set of rails that we've designed, that we've calibrated, and that we understand, so that we know exactly, no matter what happens in the market, what we are going to make the portfolio look like.
Which I guess begs the question, what does that Rubik's Cube look like then? Mm. What are the components of that cube?
Yeah, so it's in essence exactly the same underlying fundamental drivers of the market that the guy that molds the ball of clay looks at. So we look at the company's balance sheet, we look at the company's income statement, the cash flow statement, the risk and return of the company. You know, so all the fundamentals that gets used to construct the ball of clay, we look at the same data, but just do it in a much more structured way. And that allows us to inherently take out the emotion from our investment decision-making. And that's pretty important.
I want to get to emotion in a while, and I want to talk about the importance of human insight and perhaps the gatekeeping role that it plays in this whole process.
Very important.
We'll get there in just a moment. But this systematic approach, is it a very new science? Is it something that is evolving all the time?
So, no. The original inventor of active management, Benjamin Graham, was actually a quant, so to speak. He specified a certain number of fundamental drivers of stock returns and in essence codified it. And his book, The Intelligent Investor, serves as the foundation for all of active management in essence. So it's not a new science, but I think the tools that we have at our availability has improved so much. We've gone from basically using a pen and paper to calculate what the potential return of a stock is to a calculator, to a spreadsheet. And today we've got data science tools. And the next frontier is going to be applying artificial intelligence, machine learning, to ever-growing data sets that allow us to unlock additional insights and potentially and hopefully garner additional alpha for our clients.
I want to talk about machine learning in just a moment, but in that construct of the data points, are you constantly adding and subtracting?
We are constantly doing research to improve the, we call it alpha signals that we look at. And those alpha signals are, in essence, what are the main drivers of stock return. And Jeremy, look, if you think about the stock market, it really is like a bowl of spaghetti. There are so many things driving stock returns. Trump tariffs, the gold price, the GNU, MTN's earnings report, an earthquake in Australia, whatever. There's so much noise around it. So the difficulty is trying to distill and find some golden threads through this ball of spaghetti that allows you to get some framework around your decision-making and hopefully generate outperformance from that framework. But developing that framework requires a large amount of data. So you've got to get the whole ball of spaghetti before you can start to detangle it. And there are some very critical sort of principles that needs to be applied when you start to detangle this ball of spaghetti. And that's what really the engineering mindset brings to the table.
Wherein then is the balance between the automation and human intervention as you try to untangle that that big bowl of pasta?
So humans are involved everywhere. When we designed the process, we are the brains behind the philosophy of the process. We built everything. We are involved at the beginning where we consume the data and we make sure that everything is robust and correct. We're involved in every step through the way. As we rotate this Rubik's Cube, we're doing controls on that and making sure that everything happens correctly. And we're involved in the actual implementation, sending our trades through to the market. So I think that the biggest myth about systematic investing is that it's a black box. So I want to dispel that emphatically. In my mind, the biggest black box is the human mind, where you don't know what emotions and insights there are. We know exactly what we're going to do. And we know that we look at the company's quality, its profitability, we look at its valuation, how expensive it is, and we look at its potential growth prospects. And those are the main golden threads through this bowl of spaghetti that we use to help us find those profitable companies.
So there is a bit of human emotion here, because what happens if your view on a given day is counterintuitive to the data that you're getting from the Rubik's Cube?
Well, look, we've got a couple of funds at Standard. One of the funds is purely systematic. So no matter what my thoughts, feelings, insights are,
you're gonna go with a cube.
The process, yeah. Yes. And then we've got another fund where we've got additional fundamental oversight, where we can say that perhaps the process needs to be overridden and there's a short-term risk that needs to be managed, and we would then implement that oversight. So I really think that is the future of active management. And I guess there's a lovely story about that, Jeremy. Back in the early days, you could only enter a chess tournament. This is a story about chess. You could only enter a chess tournament either as a human or as a chess computer.
Yes.
And then the humans played the computers, and eventually IBM developed this chess computer called Deep Blue, and it beat the world champion of the time, Garry Kasparov, at chess. I mean, it was big news.
Huge news. He wasn't happy.
He wasn't happy. Yeah. But look, that's where the world is going.
Yeah.
But then, interestingly, Garry Kasparov then actually came up with this concept of freestyle chess. Right now, what freestyle chess was about and is about is it is where a human is allowed to use a chess computer to help him with his decision making. So Garry Kasparov organized the very first of these freestyle chess tournaments, and the really fascinating thing that came out of this was that the winner of this first freestyle chess tournament was a team of human and computer. But the really interesting thing was that the chess rating of the human was pretty average, and the chess rating of the computer in that team was pretty average. But the combination of the two was what was so powerful. And so I think that really is what the future of active investing is going to look like. It's going to still require the human insights, but you're going to have the tools and the data behind you to extract the maximum insight from the computer to generate returns for clients.
All right. Let's talk a little bit then about the mechanics of the process. And maybe you could walk us through a typical data to decision journey in the process? If you want to decode that question, what do you do every day?
So Jeremy, there are certain philosophical foundations around investing, and that is that high quality companies, good valuations and good growth prospects tend to outperform over the long term. Mm. The question is, and the detangling of the spaghetti lies in trying to figure out what are the main drivers of stock returns. And the best analogy to use there is think about a beauty contest. Mm. If you want to know, if you want to predict who's going to win the beauty contest, you shouldn't decide who you think is the most attractive participant. You should
know. We're going into dangerous territory here, my friend. I want to hear this story, yes?
You should know what the judges consider to be the most beautiful.
Yes.
So that is what the research process is that we do every day, is we distill and determine what are the main drivers that market participants use to determine what they're going to buy and what they're going to sell.
And so these are shadowing their mindset, right?
We're predicting their mindset. We are trying to predict what they are going to buy in the future. And it really is quite fundamentally grounded. Through the cycle and over the long term, 3 to 5 years, the market is driven by fundamentals, quality, value, and growth of stocks. And so what we do on a daily basis to answer your question is we basically go back and download as much historical data for every company that's ever traded on the SA market, and then we analyze that to see what is the best possible way of measuring the quality of a company, the valuation, and the growth dimension. And we test that, and then we invest according to those principles. It really is the fundamentals of active investing systematically applied.
Well, balls of clay, beauty competitions, bowls of spaghetti. This is a very interesting conversation. This is The More You Know. It's the podcast where better questions lead, I hope, to better investments. I'm with Rademeir Vermaak, and we're discussing the building blocks of a systematic equity strategy. So let's continue with the conversation. I'm assuming, to get serious for a moment, that risk management is a key feature in all
Absolutely.
Of this. So how do you build that into a systematic model?
In order to manage risk, you first have to be able to measure it. Mm. And I think a lot of active managers use rules of thumb to manage risk in their portfolio. Because we've got the data, we can really measure all the risks around every single stock. And because we can measure it, we can manage it. Mm. You know, so we've done so much research in terms of what the different risks are around a stock and how the stocks move together, you know, the correlation between the different stocks. And that allows us to build...
And the sectoral correlation as well.
Absolutely, yeah. To build a well-diversified portfolio. So you extract the maximum amount of free lunch from your portfolio. You know, so diversification is the only free lunch in investing. So if you can really measure your correlations, you can extract free lunch from that. And then we also do something which is quite innovative and I think quite unique in the market, where we manage the macro risk in the portfolio as well. So I'll give you an example. There are so many gold miners in the South African market, and they're obviously moved by the gold price. So if gold price rallies, as we've seen in the last couple of months, gold is at all-time highs. Then the gold miners in the SA market rally as well, and the whole market lifts, which means that the SA market is to an extent driven by the gold price. Now, we don't predict the gold price, okay? But because we can measure the sensitivity of the entire SA market to gold, we can say we're going to match the sensitivity of the SA market in our portfolio to gold. So we'll buy some gold counters so that we can, in essence, neutralize that risk. And in that way, we are managing the macro risk in the portfolio.
How closely allied, though, is a concept like gold to the broader market? I mean, would that have a spillover effect across all different sectors?
Not necessarily, no. I think there are certain macro drivers that we control the portfolio and manage the risk in. One of those is gold. The other is the rand-dollar exchange rate, where some South African stocks have got significant exposure to the rand-dollar exchange rate. If you think about the Rand hedges, a British American Tobacco and Enrichment. Their earnings offshore is significantly affected by the exchange rate. And some SA Inc. stocks, if you think of a Clicks and a Dis-Chem, they're less sensitive to the Rand-Dollar exchange rate. So various different factors affect different stocks in different ways, and that's where risk management becomes so important.
How important is diversification in all of this?
Oh, it's critical. Look, you can't build a portfolio that exposes you to a single theme, a single story, a single stock. You have to really be able to build a diversified portfolio that can weather some of the storms out there.
But what happens if the data is pointing you towards less diversification?
Now, that's where we enforce diversification. So we've got certain risk limits in the portfolio that enforces diversification in the portfolio. And that's by design. Sometimes you give up some alpha because of that, but the main objective is to protect client capital through the cycle.
So let's bring it back to Stanlib then. And why do you think that your approach gives you an edge compared to more passive or pure quant models?
So compared to...
Is it back to the human being, do you think?
In essence, yeah, yes. Yeah. And it comes down to that continuous process of innovation that we apply. So pure passive is a strategy that never changes. And pure quant is also a strategy that is published and never changes. We don't buy into that. We don't think you can build something and never innovate and never improve it. So we're constantly innovating, we're constantly improving.
Because the world is changing so quickly, right?
Because the world is changing and because we've got the ability to process more information in a better way. You can think of our process as the production line in a Toyota factory, right? Land Cruiser that rolls off of the production line, every single one of them is built by the same process. But in a dark room in the Toyota factory, there are a couple of scientists with white lab coats and pens in their pockets, and they're doing research on improving the product that comes off the production line and improving the production line. So that's what we do. We've got a production line that generates the best possible portfolio at this point in time, but we're constantly doing research on improving the process and the portfolio.
Why am I not surprised that you chose a Land Cruiser to illustrate that?
Do I look like a
Land Cruiser kind of guy. How difficult is it? Or how does your headspace change in terms of adapting to changing market conditions all the time while also maintaining discipline? How do you hold the line?
So there's a lovely story about Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
And it was in October of 2008. He was driving around the streets of Omaha with a colleague of his.
In a Land Cruiser? No, I just...
Possibly. And I mean, obviously, October 2008 was the midst of the global financial
crisis.
Indeed,
yes.
And his colleague said to him, Warren, you know, the whole world is falling apart around us. What are we going to do? Mm. What stocks are we going to sell? It's a quagmire out there. Mm. And Warren calmly turned to him and said, do you know what was the best-selling chocolate bar in 1978? Colleague said, no. And Warren said, it was a Snickers. And do you know what is the best-selling chocolate bar in 2008?
I think I know the answer, yeah.
It's still a Snickers. So focus less on what is changing when you build your portfolio and focus more on what remains the same. And really, that is in essence what we do. We know what the main drivers of stock returns are through the cycle. So when there are short periods of dislocation, COVID, the global financial crisis, Trump tariffs, we know what drives markets in the long term, and so we stick to the process.
All right, so you've lifted the bonnet on the Land Cruiser. You've taken us behind the process and the philosophy of systematic investing. Let's talk a little bit about results and outcome as far as investors are concerned.
So in the Stanlib Enhanced Multistyle Equity Fund, which is our flagship equity fund, we have generated since inception, the fund was launched in 2016, top quartile performance over 2, 3, 5, 7, and 9 years. So since inception, top quartile. But as importantly, we are at bottom quartile when it comes to fees. So you really are getting the best bang for your buck investing in this fund. An additional couple of points that I think speaks to performance is that we've got a 100% hit rate over any rolling 3 years since inception. So that means we've outperformed the market on a three-year look ahead, on a three-year window, all of the time. We're one of the only funds in the market that can boast of that. And then the clincher, speaking about free lunches, is if you look at the correlation of our fund with some of our peers in the market, the correlation of our alpha is zero to negative with most peers, which means if you combine us with some of our competitors, you really have the opportunity for a free lunch.
So final question then, if someone wants to start thinking more systematically about their own portfolio, where's the jump off point? How do they begin?
Get some data on the stock. Start with what you look at the moment. If you look at PE, then get some data, get some PE for every stock that you're looking at, and try and get historical PEs, and then go back in time travel, back to a previous point, say 2015, and you've got the returns of the stocks from 2015 onwards, and then see how much does PE affect which stock performs best in the future and which performs worst in the future. And that's a good starting point for deciphering and untangling the spaghetti. Mm.
Come and have some more pasta with us at some point. That was a very interesting conversation. So science, structure, and strategy, I guess. That's how Standard is helping investors navigate markets with confidence. My thanks to Rademeir Vermaak for that masterclass in systematic thinking and also a little bit of Italian cooking thrown in there as well. Please join us next time on The More You Know, where clarity is always the smartest investment. Thank you so much for watching. Stanlib Asset Management Pty Limited is an authorized financial services provider in terms of the FASE Act. This content should not be construed as advice.